Lemuria is the evolution of the moon recapitulated on the Earth. But what is significant here is that for the first time in all evolutionary history, human beings begin to develop a degree of independence from the spiritual world. Now, at first, human beings are still half floating, half flying around the Earth, which is the moon, as it were, assuming the size of the orbit of the moon as well for this period of time, but rapidly condensing. And as the Earth condenses, human beings become more and more involved in the Earth, begin to cast off increasingly the animal raiment in which they are, so that they assume more and more of a form needed for the human being, and particularly the ability to stand upright. And as they cast off the various natures of their being that have built up over the previous evolutionary periods, we have the creation story enacted of the creation of the animal world, the creation of the plant world, the creation of the mineral world. All of these older steps of evolution begin to appear again, but now in a more hardened form. Now the Earth starts to take on a mineral characteristic. Though it is volcanic, it's volatile. There is endless change and transformation going on, and there are only a few human beings who have the strength and the fortitude to be willing to go down into this volatile and rapidly densifying state. So everywhere, lava is hardening. And Steiner had spoken once of how the spirits of movement threw up waves of earthly substance, and the spirits of form danced upon them, and they became the mountains. We have the wonderful mythologies of these living beings, these giants who, as it were, are torn apart or overcome, and their bodies cast down, and this becomes the hardened form of the earth. So all of this figures, the gigantic humanity being, whom Steiner speaks of in other contexts as Adam Cadman, who only partially comes to the earth while a good deal remains still cosmic, watching and waiting. And the Lemurian period, because it is a recapitulation of an earlier period, of course, it too must completely dissolve, as the other recapitulations have. But two things are significant and new here. Number one, Lemuria represents a stage in which the Earth's condensation has reached a point where the ordinary dissolution forces that would just, as it were, bring it back into its cosmic state no longer can do this. It's too hardened. It's too formed. So now the Earth itself assumes the contours, the size, and the shape that we know, and it cannot simply be dissolved into apparent nothingness. That's one significant aspect of this. The Earth is not going to go away, even though it has gone through only a recapitulation of an earlier state. Secondly, this pralaya-like state, this ending of this recapitulation, will not be brought about by spiritual beings, but rather by human beings. And it won't, in the usual sense of the word, be an intentional deed. Rather, it is because human beings have not learned how to control the force of fire that they have been given. The fire forces, which were handed down by spiritual beings only to the most developed human beings, who were few and far between in Lemuria, these forces have gotten into the hands of those humans, primitive in nature, unable to handle them. And so Lemuria, we might imagine, goes up in a kind of volcanic blaze and disappears. And Steiner has spoken about Madagascar as carrying a remnant, a last remnant of Lemuria, a place where the differentiation process was still in progress. So there was present in the original Lemuria all kinds of intermediate kingdoms of nature, mineral plants and plant animals, and animal humans as well, these dragon-like forms which came and went and had to be overcome. All of this had to receive an increasing degree of differentiation from the human being so that the form could be made manifest and human beings could stand upright, move independently of spiritual beings, and even begin to utter something like a primitive song speech, which also affected movement. So Lemuria ends, and now Earth per se begins with the fourth period on the Earth stage of Earth evolution. And this is the well-known period, well-known and often reviled period of Atlantis, which Steiner says did exist. And whereas Lemuria was a fiery realm, Atlantis was a watery realm. Its location was not in the Indian Ocean and part of the Pacific, like Lemuria, but rather in the other great ocean, the Atlantic Ocean, named after the fabled Atlantean continent. And so strong were the water forces in Atlantis that it was always covered in mist, that there were very few in Atlantis vouchsafed to see what for us would be normal conditions of sunlight. It was much more like being in a deep, dense fog. But the lack of light and the lack of sun warmth was not so important because the Atlanteans were clairvoyant to a very high degree and could see light and color forms around other human beings. Steiner says they had a kind of lantern-like formation that allowed them to glow for other human beings and also perceive this glow. Atlantean society, unlike Lemuria, was highly organized. Lemuria had been very matriarchal, tribal in nature. Atlantis was very patriarchal, priestly in nature. And here we might say is the real beginning of the priestly nature of human beings starts to arise here, at least that possibility. And it was organized according to oracles, oracular centers, along its vertical axis. So we might say that the highest point of Atlantis reached perhaps towards the vicinity of today's Iceland and Ireland, and the lowest point reached down towards Africa and today's Latin America. And the oracles were centered in the sun oracle, like a heart, very much in the center of things. The upper planet oracles, Mars, Jupiter, and Saturn, were to the north of the sun. The lower planets, Mercury, Venus, Moon, below the central oracle. And out of these oracular centers came the organization of social life and what Steiner speaks of as a highly advanced technology, because the Atlanteans living in this watery realm had a very powerful connection with etheric forces, their own etheric bodies and the etheric body of the earth itself. And Steiner tells us that many of these fabled figures and events in fairy tales actually give a somewhat fictionalized but generally fairly accurate picture of what the Atlanteans were like and what they could do. So think of Jack and the Beanstalk, where a seed is put in the ground, and by the next day it has risen up to the heavens itself, become taller than the tallest tree, with a menacing giant at its top. He said the Atlanteans could do this, that growth forces were very, very powerful, and it was possible for entire landscapes, in a way, to be affected very, very quickly, and to die no less quickly. These forces of plant growth were so in hand, so controlled by the most advanced Atlanteans, that air flight was possible. So Steiner said they had remarkable airships that ran not on the fuels of today, which are, as it were, based on the artifacts and the fossil forms of the growth forces of those days, but rather on pure growth force, anti-gravity itself. In a book like Atlantis and Lemuria, you can read far more detailed descriptions of this. But what I want to point to here is, again, the organization of this Atlantean culture. So for the first time we hear about oracles, and for the first time we see a clear differentiation in human culture. On the one hand, there are these priest-like oracular figures who have been chosen by higher spiritual beings to stand in contradistinction to the particularly luciferic forces that otherwise held sway in Atlantean culture and were to hold sway in all other cultures up until the time of Christ. So these oracles, particularly the Sun Oracle, were in contact with the very highest of the hierarchies and were able then to work according to their intentions. And so certainly for the first third or first half of Atlantean existence, which stretched about 10,000 years, now that the sun and the moon are outside of the earth, now that the earth stands in a kind of orderly relationship to these extracts of its own being, now time can start to become measured and ordered in our way. So a culture like Atlantis would exist for a period of about 12 of the passages of the sun through the signs of the zodiac. So 10 to 14,000 years approximately might be the time that it would spend in that period. And in this period of time, and I should mention Atlantis was not 10 of them, but only 5 of them. That's why I'm saying closer to 10,000 years rather than 20. In this time, it went through itself a number of periodic changes, but early on, we have the differentiation between the oracular figures, the priests, who have these temples dedicated to the particular hierarchical beings who inhabit the various planetary spheres. So clearly from the sun on up, we're speaking primarily of the second hierarchy, and the lower planets more in the realm of the third hierarchy. So that's one kind of differentiation. And then we have the differentiations according to the planetary spheres. And we could say that the most advanced and developed human beings tended to be in the northern section of Atlantis. The less developed, though still advanced human beings, under the leadership of the oracles of the inner planets, the Venus, Mercury, and Moon oracles. So that's another kind of differentiation. Now, we also have to recognize that outside of Atlantis, though Lemuria had basically disappeared, where there were traces of Lemuria, there were still human souls attached to those traces of Lemuria. There were still relatively small numbers of ancient Lemurians who lived on, even in Atlantean time. Does this sound familiar? The same sort of process that we saw with the spiritual beings moving from Saturn to Sun to Moon and then to Earth, holding back, remaining connected to an earlier state of being, to an earlier state of consciousness. Unwilling at first and then finally unable to take the step into the next stage of consciousness. Now, basically, the Atlanteans had nothing to do with the Lemurians. Lemurians tended to be more on the other side of the Earth, and perhaps in their airships now and then they would take a journey there, but basically it was not easy for Atlanteans to live in any kind of environment other than their watery, misty environment. Their bodies were attuned to that. And they lived in a very different relationship then to light and to darkness. So this went on well and good for a period of time. And then the forces of life, the life forces that had been used wisely and judiciously by the Atlantean oracles began to fall again into the wrong hands in their mystery centers, where human beings were allowed to and able to retain their connection with the spiritual world to sort of counterbalance the densifying, incarnating forces on the earth. In these mystery centers, some of the information, some of the powers, the capacities dribbled out and then fell again into the hands of the wrong individuals. Steiner has said about Atlantis that the technology on Atlantis was the most advanced technology ever seen on the face of the earth at that time or in times to come. Said that our great inventions and our remarkable discoveries are nonetheless pale before what the Atlanteans were able to effect. So it's interesting to see that aspects of Earth evolution, it's not just a sort of line of continued improvement. There are expansions and contractions in human knowledge, understanding, and capacities as well. It's not just all going in one direction by any means. So these watery, etheric life forces were let out, as it were, and over time their misuse and their selfish misuse began to lead to the possibility of the destruction of Atlantis. Now, the Sun Oracle, early on, sensed that this was coming, and in fact was able, with the kind of spirit vision with which he was endowed, able to get a good idea of when this would happen. And so Atlanteans were prepared to begin a kind of orderly evacuation of Atlantis, because it was known that the flood, the great deluge, would begin in the north. So the northern Atlanteans had to be the first to leave. And then the Sun Oracle would leave next and leave for a period of time, relatively short but nonetheless significant, would leave the oracles of the lower planets to be the last on Atlantis. And they would also be the last to leave. Now, what this meant was that those who left first the Saturn, Jupiter, Mars, and Sun groups that were led by their oracles, and that were speaking in a way a very, very great sort of tribal little city-like populations who would leave, that they left Atlantis when the Atlantean mysteries were still close to their height. They had not deteriorated very much. So these were individuals who still had a link to the highest spiritual beings, were still working to harmonize their physical, etheric, and astral. The ego only existed here and there in traces, probably the only real being bearing anything like a bit of the ego was the Sun Oracle himself. So the first Atlanteans to leave, they were the ones who carried Atlantis in its purest and highest and therefore most ready to evolve state. They were those who could carry the best Atlantis had to offer into a new state of being. Those who stayed on Atlantis longer, who continued to practice the mysteries without, however, the harmonizing supervision of the Sun Oracle, they tended to practice Atlantean rituals that were in a state of deterioration, that were already becoming filled with selfishness and under the sway of the lower Luciferic beings. And here Steiner says that we can speak of beings who wrongfully get so entangled in the mineralization of the earth and the lower impulses of the astral world that now we can speak of a kind of demonic force that starts to exist here. But finally, as the flood moves south, they must leave as well. Where do these beings go? Where do these groups go? The highest of all, the most advanced and developed of the Atlanteans, still working with the highest mystery forces, those who left first, crossed over through today's Ireland and British Isles, made their way through part of Europe, Russia, what is, of course, today by these names, and geographical, geological, meteorological conditions were completely different. But they made their way finally, partly by land and partly by sea, to what is today's India. And they became the progenitors, the leaders of what would eventually become the first great human civilization of ancient India. The next group coming from the Jupiter forces did not go quite so far. Their migration was shorter. They did not have the strength and stamina quite that the first group had to go so far east, and they stayed more in the today's Fertile Crescent in ancient Persia. The lands of Iran of today. The group that left with the Mars forces, they again did not have the full force of the stamina of those who had gone before, and they were to settle much more in the area around northern Africa and become the progenitors then of the Egyptian culture and all that followed. And finally, those from the Sun Oracle became then those who could only go as far as the northern lands and became there the seeds of the European peoples. Those who stayed on till the very end, there was no possibility of them moving east. The only way out was to the west. And so Steiner describes that the Venus, Mercury, and Moon forces that those oracular leaders, and by now they were much more severed from the spiritual world, that they went west and found their way to the South American continent. And there they moved from south to north and became then the progenitors of the Maya, the Inca, the Aztecs, the Native Americans, and the Inuits as well. So rather than the picture that's usually given of peoples moving from the north across the Aleutian Islands and little by little down, 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 moving from north to south, actually Steiner says the movement was from south to north. And that the mysteries, and this is where we start to get into Steiner's pictures, which are hardly politically correct. He said that the mystery centers, the mystery practices of these people were like deteriorated pictures of what had gone on in Atlantis. That there certainly would be some similarities with what was seen in Asia and also in northern Africa, let's say pyramidal structures as temples. There would be a priesthood, there would be spiritual leadership. Many things would be there in common, but they would be in very different relationships to the beings of the hierarchy. That they were much more, we might say, under the sway of Luciferic beings than those who had moved to the east. Though there too, Lucifer still was the earth's rightful ruler, and all peoples had to make a connection with him. And with this, Atlantis sank completely, leaving, according to Steiner, its only remnant, Ireland, the land without snakes, for there were no snakes in Atlantis. They had already caused too much trouble in Lemuria. And now Atlantis sank, and again, this had nothing to do with the direct work of the spiritual world anymore. Spiritual beings are less and less involved and responsible for the ending of one era, we might say, even in the physical, the geophysical sense, in the beginning of another. Now human beings will increasingly carry that responsibility. Sound familiar? And we can see then why, although, you know, these things, Lemuria, Atlantis, all of this, they kind of remind us of the kind of weirdest occultic thoughts and ideas and notions of the late 19th and early 20th century. And I think there are those who wish Steiner never got involved in them. But he's pointing to some very, very important things here. The relationship of humanity to technology, the migrations of peoples. There's been a very popular, powerful book written recently, Guns, Germs, and Steel, which also asks this question, how does geography, geology, meteorology play in the destinies of peoples? And here Steiner is pointing to the fact that it plays in a very, very big way. And here we also have his beginnings of discussion about the so-called root races of humanity. Certainly one of his most controversial teachings to this day. So we'll talk about this further as we look at the evolution of what Steiner termed the great cultural epochs.